At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Two Out the First. It is May the 5th, 2023. I'm Ryan Balaji. Happy Cinco de Mayo to everybody. If you're celebrating, whether you're catching a margarita or eating a taco or just being happy that it's the 5th of May, you know, whatever. Happy Cinco de Mayo. We've got a couple things to talk about today on the show. We are presented by our friends at Swanee's Golf. Check out swanneesgolf.co for all of their apparel. Big shipment coming from the day. Can't wait to start wearing it on the air for all of you guys. They have so much great stuff, and a lot of it is actually carbon neutral with Reprieve fabric, which is made from plastic bottles and other recycled materials. They're doing well by the earth, and they make great threads. So looking forward to having that here on the show and each and every day on the video version of the show. If you're just listening, hey, visualize me wearing cool stuff. All right, two stories today to talk about. Let's start with the DP World Tour. We haven't talked about this in the last couple of days, so a couple of things have come down from the DP World Tour, and it feels like an orchestrated series of announcements instead of kind of one big announcement to draw everything out a little bit. So let's bring it back. Basically a year ago, when LIV started last June, a bunch of players that were DP World Tour members signed up to play. And at that point, they did so without a release from the DP World Tour to compete in an opposing tour's event. And they then sought to play in the Genesis Scottish Open a few weeks later because they were still DP World Tour members, many of them PGA Tour members, and they wanted to play that tournament, co-sanctioned by both tours. And the DP World Tour and the PGA Tour were like, no way, you can't play. And they sought an emergency, the players did, an emergency arbitration ruling. They got that could stayed, basically. It said, you can play on the DP World Tour until we figure this out in a hearing, basically, a year from now, or many months from now. So that hearing was in February, and then a couple of weeks went by, you had the hearing, then you had the decision from the arbitration board put together by an organization called Sports Resolutions. And they favored the DP World Tour in that response. They said, look, the DP World Tour's regulation is not extraordinary, it's not out of the ordinary, it's fine that they can fine players £100,000 for playing on a different tour without proper authorization from the DP World Tour. When you sign up to be a DP World Tour member or a PGA Tour member or a LIV member for whatever reason, you know, whatever tour, you sign and agree to a contract with regulations and you agree to abide by those. And if you don't, then you could be subject to penalties which are laid out in documentation. And so the arbitration board panel decided, yes, these things were laid out. Players knew the consequences. This wasn't arbitrary. This is okay. You're going to get fined. And so that was the resolution. And then there were some weeks that went by and people were asking Keith Pelley, who's the chief executive of the DP World Tour, European Tour Group, what are you going to do? Are you going to penalize these players? Are you going to now impose sanctions on them because you are in the right to do so? And he kind of hemmed and hawed, said, you know, we'll talk about it in due course. We're not going to do that right now. Well, this week was due course. They announced earlier in the week that 4 of those players who played in the first LIV event, Richard Bland, Ian Poulter, Lee Westwood, and Sergio Garcia, all resigned their membership. So they're no longer DP World Tour members. And for the 3 of them, excluding Bland, those were Ryder Cup stalwarts for the better part of 20 years, 25 years, really. And those guys will not be eligible to compete in the Ryder Cup because you need to be a DP World Tour member to be eligible to be on the team. And I know that people like to play semantic games, go, oh, well, it's not going to be the best Europeans then. It never was about being the best Europeans. Not ever in the history of the Ryder Cup, since it became a corporate entity, was it about that. Not once. It was about the best of the European tour born in Europe. End of story. And I think people often misunderstand or almost intentionally try to misunderstand that. The DP World Tour makes an insane amount of money that basically funds their operations for 2 years off of the Ryder Cup. It's long been this way. So they obviously want to promote their own product, which means they want to promote their own players, which means that only their own players are going to get into this competition. It's the entire reason Rory McIlroy is a DP World Tour member, or Jon Rahm, or Victor Hovland. Name your player. It's literally the only reason, probably in some cases, because if they didn't have to be a DP World Tour member to qualify for the Ryder Cup, I don't think they would seek it or would really use it. So there's a reason why this sanction exists. There's a reason why the Ryder Cup is the carrot, because it's a financial one. And I think that should make sense to people. But at this point, they could then, with this arbitration ruling, the DP World Tour could go to players like Sergio and Poulter and Westwood. And there are other guys. I mean, there are 17 players in total who went and played that first live event that didn't have authorization for the DP World Tour. 16 of them, the tour announced yesterday, have paid £100,000 fines for playing in that event. So if you finished in dead last and got $120,000, you basically just forked it all over to the DP World Tour in a fine. Many of those guys are no longer on LIV. They're not in the LIV league concept this year. But I'd say about more than half are. But the other half, really, maybe they played one or two or three LIV events, but have since come back to their home tour or a different tour or what have you. And then the one standout guy that has not paid the fine is Sergio Garcia. He's the one and only guy. And in the announcement detailing that 16 of the 17 players who were fined had paid the fine, the DP World Tour made it very clear that Sergio Garcia has indicated to them he has no intention of paying this fine, even though it's kind of a known fact, it's been out there, that LIV has told its players they are willing to pay legal fees and fines imposed on them from their former tours for leaving to go to LIV. And so that indicates a level of pettiness I think is fascinating, because both Garcia, and I'll throw in Westwood, Richard Bland got pissed up drunk and started complaining about the PG or the European tour with Eddie Pepperell on Twitter. And now he's off Twitter because he realized he shouldn't tweet drunk. You should never tweet drunk. And all these guys that have resigned their membership are like, oh, Westwood said something to the effect of, I didn't think it would ever end like this. What are you talking about, dude? Everybody told you, everybody, the DP World Tour, the PGA Tour, anybody who could tell you that had some awareness of what was going on, if you move to LIV, you're not going to be able to play in the Ryder Cup. You're not going to be able to captain a Ryder Cup team. You're not going to be able to do this. You're not going to be able to do that. You're probably going to get fined. You're going to be expelled from the DP World Tour. You're not going to play on the PGA Tour. All these different things. These are the consequences of your actions, and they're unlikely to change. And yet you still come up with this quote, oh, I can't believe this is how it ended. You set up the end game. And that's your choice. It is totally your choice. But you can't be confused or feign surprise that this happened. This was what was told would happen to you, assuming that the courts or an arbitration panel would let it happen. And guess what? They've let it happen. Now it's happening. So Westwood is very surprising. Bland has kind of turned into a very strange kind of almost parody of himself regarding how he feels about LIV and the European Tour. I mean, he made like 500 starts on the European Tour before he got a win. And then he's trying to talk down to Eddie Pepperell like, oh, you've been on the tour for 15 minutes. I've seen a whole lot. The word that's been commonly used last couple days, I think Westwood used it. I know McIlroy used it, trying to describe that some of these guys will never be Ryder Cup captains. Shame. It's a shame. It really is a shame that it has worked out this way. And there could still be some reconciliation at some point in the future. Who knows? I don't pretend to know whether there will be one at some point. But it just is, it's a bummer. It's just a legit bummer that it kind of came down like this. Anyhow, the DP World Tour says they're going to announce further sanctions later, and that's probably sometime next week, early next week. They'll probably announce the fines for players who continue to play LIV as DP World Tour members, because guess what? A whole bunch of those guys that haven't resigned their membership are still DP World Tour members, and therefore, at least in concept, subject to the same sanction every time they played a LIV event that they didn't have an explicit authorization for the DP World Tour to play. So if you've been playing LIV from the start, That's 8 events last year. So far, that's what? Five this year? So you're talking 1.3 million pounds in fines, if that's the way they choose to go. And I have no idea what their plan is, what they're doing, or whether these guys are going to resign and that'll be enough for the DP World. No concept. No idea. But that's what's coming. And for the guys that went and played a couple live events because they needed to fill out fields and they were comfortable with that, they're probably going to pay back a good chunk of the money they made unless you did really, really well. Like, if you're toward the bottom third, you didn't make that much doing this. But if you finished in the top third, obviously you did very well, and it's worth the fine, financially speaking, I guess, in the end. So we'll see what happens from the DP World Tour perspective. But now it's just a whole lot of pettiness and saltiness, and this has been a petty process the entire time. I completely understand that, and I think people also understand there's a reason why. And the whole notion of that LIV is kind of a closed shop. I mean, depending on which person you talk to and how emotional they feel about LIV, but the idea that it's not a closed shop is something they're willing to argue, because there is now technically a system of relegation and promotion, sort of. I mean, based on a point system for those 48 players, based on the European or the Asian Tour / one portion of the Asian Tour, the International Series, those results. So, yes, I guess there's technically a promotion and relegation system, but you can't just get an exemption to go play a live event. And with the rosters being locked, I think that kind of further stiffens the concept that it's a closed shop, because it's a closed shop for an entire year at a time. You can't even play your way in like a Monday qualifier or a sponsor exemption. So there's just lots of pettiness to go around. And while I find that drama great content and truly entertaining, it is also really a bummer. Okay, second story for today. We actually have just two topics today instead of kind of an amalgamation of them. But the second topic today is some comments from Jay Monahan, the PGA Tour commissioner, and also a little bit from Xander Schauffele, and just around the designated tournament concept. So there's the schedule's coming together for the PGA Tour for next year, right? We've heard that the outline of how this is supposed to work, with how you get into designated tournaments and predominantly what's going to be a designated tournament and how they're going to be spaced out, how the schedule is going to work. But we haven't really heard about what exactly the designated tournaments are going to be and what they will look like moving forward. Will they change from year to year? Will they mostly be the same? Will they all be the same? And Monahan gave some insight into that based on some comments made ahead of the Wells Fargo Championship. And he more or less indicated that whatever is going to be the designated schedule next year is going to pretty much be the designated schedule moving forward, whatever it is. So the thought here is they're going to change at least one, if not two, of the designated events that were designated this year, that were like Phoenix Open, for example, those four that weren't invitational tournaments to begin with. And that they may swap them out for others and create a more permanent schedule that way. And from everything Jack Nicklaus said the week of the Honda Classic, which is no longer the Honda Classic, whatever it's going to be, but that tournament, he said that he had heard Phoenix was out and that Pebble was in as a designated event. So would Pebble be a permanent designated tournament? I think that would be the case then if it goes down that path. So there's still some things to be worked out, but it sounds like definitely Travelers is going to be a permanent one. I don't know that for absolute certain, but I think the Travelers puts in so much money in marketing, so much effort into building this tournament, so much in terms of resources, financial and otherwise, that they want this permanently. They're willing to have that and sacrifice being an open event in order to have a killer field every year. They're willing to do that. And so I think they're going to be there. I don't know about Harbortown. I'd be interested. I don't think Harbortown needs that. I think it's got juice as an event otherwise. So we'll see if that sticks around. If Phoenix then goes back to being Phoenix Open, totally fine. It's got juice. Don't worry about it. And then you've got Pebble, which I think has a decision to make here, because if the PGA Tour wants their events to be designated more or less permanently instead of on a rotational basis, then Pebble has to consider an existential change to the tournament. Because if you're going to have 70 to 78 players in the field, that means you're not going to have 156 pro-am teams. You're not going to have 156 celebs. You're not going to have the money that comes from 70 some odd of them, 78 maybe more, that are paying $30,000 to $40,000 each per year to be in the pro-am. So that's money to charity that is being taken away. If that's negotiated with the PGA Tour and say, hey, you're going to give us an extra $3 million in charitable donations for our tournament because we're cutting the field in half, okay, then maybe that's a decision they make. But it sounds like what they're considering, where they're taking the pro-am potentially down to 2 days instead of, or 3 days instead of four, or having just 2 days of the pro-am because there will only be a need for two courses, something like that. That sounds more like a permanent decision, not a temporary one, which I think that brings an end to an era. Maybe some people will think about when the, what used to be the Western Open got renamed the BMW Championship and became a FedEx Cup playoff event, a tournament with a very rich, deep history, one that was one point considered a fifth major or a major-like championship, now just kind of being reduced to a field of 70 players. And I think that upset a lot of people at the time, particularly in the Chicago area, because of the Western Golf Association tied to that tournament. But the Western Golf Association's made a lot from it. I mean, they've opened up Evans Scholars locations around the country. They've brought the tournament to other places for that reason, to open up chapters and change the lives of kids who become caddies through the Evans Scholars program. The clam bake, this tournament, the Crosby, AT&T Pebble Pro-Am, whatever you want to call it, this has a huge, rich history. You know, it's an almost 80-year-old tournament. We're getting into that range with it. And I'm sure it's gone through lots of different iterations over the years, right? It used to be small, got bigger, then got even bigger, changed courses, it's done different it's done lots of different things over the years. So it can evolve with time. And I think if you were someone who was playing in the event previously, in the last, you know, recent memory, and they jacked up the fee and said, look, it's gonna be $50,000, but if you pay for 50, you're practically guaranteed a top 100 player in the world. I think players would sign up for that. The amateur players would sign up for that. So they wouldn't necessarily lose as much in the way of charitable donation and funding for that comes through the pro-am. Financially, probably works out fine in the end, just with a simple raise of money. Because for frankly, if you can pay $30,000 or $40,000 to play in a pro-am, what's another 10 or 20 if you're just cutting that check, no problem? Let's be realistic about it. But all that to say, it seems like these things are going to be locked in place. And it's going to be locked in place for a substantial period of time. I think that's a shame. I think the PGA Tour has an opportunity here with these designated tournaments. And not all of them, just a couple of them, where they could take these tournaments around the country, around the world even if you wanted. And you could take these tournaments to places around the world, and in the United States and Canada and Mexico. I mean, take your pick. But you could take these places where there's not a regular PGA Tour event. If you look at the PGA Tour schedule, geographically speaking, there's really nothing in the Midwest. I mean, there's the Minnesota event, sometimes in Chicago, although that's not an every year market. You got nothing in the Pacific Northwest, basically nothing in the Northeast. This is a tour that's highly situated in the Sun Belt and the Southwest. And that's it. And there are some events in California. Obviously, that spans quite a bit of population of the country. But there are large geographic swaths of this country that are no longer part of the PGA Tour's footprint. And if you took a couple of these designated tournaments and just moved them around every year and made them feel like a major, you could have them with a cut. You could have a 100-player field. I don't care. Just have a cut. But have a nice big purse. Go to a venue in a community that is starving for golf, that doesn't get tournaments usually, and I think you're going to come out well ahead. And you could probably find a rotational sponsor that's willing to go with it. It has, again, national footprint. They're going to get a whole lot of bang for their buck. They can control practically everything about the tournament, and people will think of it in a higher regard because it's a tournament that moves around. And we associate majors with moving around, except the Masters, of course, and now the Chevron Championship and the Evian Championship. But we associate majors with moving. And if you had tournaments that did that, I think that would be tremendously helpful. And then you could keep everything else the same. You could keep the FedEx Cup playoffs where they are mostly rooted. You have the one in Atlanta, obviously. You have the one in Memphis. The one that moves around is the BMW. You could have every other tournament on the schedule will be rooted where it needs to be. Just move one or two a year, something like that. I think that would be the path forward I would like to see. I hope they'll consider it. I'm sure they're far enough along that it doesn't even matter. But I think from a business perspective, as a golf fan who lives in the D.C. area, and we had a tournament last year for the Wells Fargo, the weather was awful, but the support was great. And people miss having the PGA Tour in this area. And if they had the opportunity to have it in a time of year when it wasn't 10 trillion degrees, like in July when we used to have the AT&T National here, and the Quicken Loans National, people would show up in droves. And I think there's an opportunity there for the PGA Tour. And it might even do something for the events in July and August, or very early August, I guess. But those months where it's really hard to put together a good event. And if you moved events around instead and you brought them to places where like, hey, PGA Tour's in town, we haven't done this in forever, I think you would get a better reception. I think you would get more involved. You would get more money for charity raised and given out. A lot of good could be done with a dynamic schedule just in a couple places. Doesn't have to be the whole thing, just a couple places. All right, that's going to do it for us today on Two at the First. Thank you for watching or listening to the show. Catch us through a podcast platform, and you can do so. Please leave us a nice review. 5 stars, it would be appreciated. Comment helps, letting us know you're active, and you can get all your questions to me, ryan@thegolfnewsnet.com. I'm on social media at the handle Ryan Ballingy. I'm on Twitter or Instagram, sometimes Facebook, but let's be realistic. And you can also, if you're watching this show on YouTube, thanks for doing that. If you would consider subscribing to our channel, smash that like button, leave a comment. Helps just the same as a 5-star review on a podcasting service. And if you're catching us some other way, on our website or through our partners, thank you so much for doing so. Thanks for taking time out of your day to hang out with us. We will be back on Monday. Review the week that was. We'll go over some goofiness I'm sure that will happen. Maybe the European Tour will have something to say. We'll have lots going on, I'm sure, to catch up with after our weekend. Enjoy the rest of the weekend, everybody. Have a great one. Enjoy Cinco de Mayo. And we'll talk to you next time on Two Off the First.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.